Hi. Hi, David
Blog
Eagle.
Talk
How are
Radio.
You? Greetings, everyone. The song we're going to play is 1492, Columbus Sighting of Land. Open your mind to the sights and sounds of what this would have been like. I'm going to play the song now.
Liberty!
Hello, everyone. Welcome to stage left. David, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. That was an interesting song. And you know what? Now that we're entering this weekend where the unknown will celebrate Columbus Day, I think it was quite appropriate. Now, thank you for playing that.
You're welcome.
And with Nell, I want to welcome all the listeners to Fire Talk Productions Stage Left. I'm kind of your facilitator tonight, and with me is my co-facilitator and producer, Nell Cole. And
welcome.
With us tonight, we have a wonderful writer. Her name is Vivian R. Palmer Harvey. She is a missionary kid, and she is the author of The Missionary Myth Through the Eyes of a Missionary Kid. Welcome to the show, Vivian.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your hospitality.
Most welcome. So you grew up as a missionary kid. Are you codenamed MKs, right?
That's correct, yes. Yes. Yes, I certainly did. My twin and I were born in Ivory Coast, West Africa, just about 6 weeks after my parents, Ken and Betty Palmer, arrived in Ivory Coast in the town of Korogo, K-O-R-H-O-G-O. And we were born there in an African hut with a couple of African midwives. And for mom, of course, with already two young daughters at hand, that must have been an incredible and intimidating experience.
Oh, indeed, indeed. Mm-hmm. So you wrote this interesting book. The title is very telling in and of itself, The Missionary Myth Through the Eyes of a Missionary Kid. And as I understand, you're going to be reading some excerpts from your book this evening, and I think it's a good idea to whet the appetite of anyone who is interested in knowing about these things. Most of us are extremely ignorant of what goes on, not only on the receiving end of the missionary efforts, but also the children of these missionaries. Most people don't know what you experience and the pros and the cons. So with that being said, Nell, I think we'd love to hear some excerpts from the book, Missionary.
Actually, though, David, if we can wait till tomorrow to hear more of the excerpts and focus more on the reading that she did on Columbus today, if possible.
Now you know what? I love surprises.
Okay.
You know, this is it's like a birthday to me. I'm a day older, so you know. absolutely. So you've written something on Columbus, huh?
Yeah. So she's going to read why the fuss over Columbus Day. So before you read that, can you kind of tell us what motivated you to write it? Because I know that it really, the whole Columbus Day really upsets you. So I'd love to hear what made you write it, and then love for you to share the writing with us.
I certainly will, Nell. It goes back to so many issues. It's sometimes hard to pinpoint, but I think the biggest issue for me is the amount of deception and untruth-telling about our history as Americans. And that, you see, ties right into the missionary myth and the things that not only our parents were told but were emphasized by the boarding school authorities, the missionary sending organization.
Right.
But upon having heard and understood much more about the issues with residential schools and how there are so many similarities, of course, major differences. I'm not going to compare apples as apples. I'm going to say, look, this is one story. The residential school situation ties right back into this Columbus issue.
Right.
And it is, it was horrifying, tell you the truth. It was absolutely horrifying. And so I have to, when encountering something of this size, it's really important for me, for my own understanding and peace at heart, to know what the background is. And so I began to get resources and different books that just really, really tell the truth like it is. And one of those sources that I reference in this article is David E. Stannard's American Holocaust, which I'm sure many of you have already read. And there's another one, a history book actually called Lies My Teacher Told Me. It's, I'll get to it when I read it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, William J. Lowen. Awesome.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
That was William J. Lowen. I've had the pleasure of emailing him about his book. Really excellent book. I highly recommend it.
Yes. Yes, it is a very quality piece of work. And so with those two resources plus others and the understanding that I've gained, and plus this holiday just around the corner,
right,
it began to just dwell on me that I needed to write something out about it so that I could give a better understanding not only for myself but for anyone who was interested in listening, which there aren't too many people in my world who really want to know.
Right, but that's more reason to speak up, not less.
Yes, and
even, yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And so with the missionary issues at hand, being equipped to speak out and say, look, this is what happened, whether you like it or not, whether you think it's true or not, this happened,
right,
and what are we going to do about it? That is the ultimate goal, because you can't sit in silence once you know the truth, or you become part of the problem.
Exactly.
So I don't want to be part of the problem. I've got enough problems in my life already.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just need to interject at this moment, Vivian. I am descended of the Taino Band of Arawak people. And,
really?
And I'm a Cherokee ancestry too. So, you know, what you're bringing to the forefront tonight is very, very, very important to me, because I do try to educate people about the history, and it is a personal matter, issue to me, and I really appreciate your honesty, and I'm really, really looking forward to hearing what you have written about this. It is important for people to understand the perspective. When we talk about it, that, oh, he's just a disgruntled Indian, you know, just spouting a lot of bitterness and anger, which, you know, I'm beyond bitterness at this point in history. I just want people to know the truth. And if they hear the truth, that makes me happy. If they don't want to hear the truth, then that it's between them and their conscience. So,
yes,
you know, with that being
yes.
said, you know, I'm looking forward to this, Vivian. Thank you very much, dear.
Well, I am so pleased, and I just offer you my greatest congratulations on survival of your family, and I don't know how else to put it. I'm just so grateful that you and your family have survived, and it's a blessing to talk to you, and I wish Creator's greatest blessings on you and all of yours.
LT, thank you.
With that being said, would you like to begin to read what you've written?
Yes, yes, I certainly will. I'm going to read a little bit slower because I find that when I read quickly, I tend to make mistakes, so I'll just read a little bit slower, okay?
Well, just find your comfort level and don't worry about it. Just read from your heart.
All right. What is the big deal about Columbus? Some important questions to ask are these. Why is it important to discuss Christopher Columbus and his accomplishments. Why can't we leave him alone, allow him the favored status given him by the majority of American history books? Who was Christopher Columbus, and what is his historical track record? Details of his birth and lineage are dubious and differ from one account to another. Textbooks desire to portray him as a man of vision, energy, resourcefulness, and courage. He is held up as an example of faith and morality, as well as a marker dividing past history from present. History books speak of the pre-Columbian era, which marked the Americas before 1492. With his discovery of a new continent, which Spain's King Ferdinand immediately appreciated, Columbus was then re-outfitted for a larger second voyage. He made such a large gold strike in Haiti that he and his successors put hundreds of thousands of Indians into forced labor mining camps. What was the mentality or culture bearing most influence on Columbus and his generation? Columbus was shaped by at least two cultural factors, the ideological and theological developments of Europe, as well as the inventions and developments enabling exploration. First, 1,000 years of Christian culture, which enabled, quote, saving souls for the kingdom of heaven, unquote. Second, the gaining of wealth from distant lands, which then helped resource future expeditions for natural resources and filling the coffers of the sending country. In Letter to the King and Queen of Spain, dated July 1503, Columbus is recorded saying, "God is most excellent. Gold constitutes treasure, and he who has it does all he wants in the world and can even lift up souls to paradise." What really happened? Of Columbus's accomplishments, two phenomena impacted the modern world. First, the taking of land, wealth, and labor from the unfortunate indigenous populations on whose shores he and his crew beached, and domination through the proclamation of the requirement, a document read in Spanish to uncomprehending Indians, which dictated complete subservience of them to their new king and threat of complete annihilation by the king's representatives, by authority of the king himself and the church. Second is the transatlantic slave labor / sex trade, which created the racial underclass. As recorded in the textbook, Lies My Teacher Told Me, Chapter 2, with his first voyage, Columbus kidnapped up to 25 Indians, of which less than 10 actually survived the return to Spain, besides the gold, trinkets, parrots, and other items of interest to be presented to King of Spain, Ferdinand, and Queen Isabella. According to Bartolomé de las Casas, whose account is recorded in the book Conquest of Eden, with the second voyage in 1493 to Haiti, King Ferdinand funded Columbus with 200 foot soldiers, 20 cavalry, with many crossbows and small cannon, lances and swords, and a still more terrible weapon against the Indians, 20 hunting dogs who were turned loose and immediately tore the Indians apart. In 1495, Columbus initiated a raid on the Indian villages for slaves. 1,500 Arawak were caught. 500 of the best were chosen for shipping to Spain. Of those, 200 died en route. Another 500 were rounded up for slave work in the newly established concentrating mining camps. The lifespan of a slave in those camps was typically 3 months. A quote from the text, Lies My Teacher Told Me, page 28, La Casa said, "What we committed in the Indies stands out among the most unpardonable offenses ever committed against God and mankind, and this trade in Indian slaves as one of the most unjust, evil, and cruel among them." Following in 1496, Spaniards began a reign of terror among the indigenous population, hunting and killing them for sport and for dog food. Besides this, two additional hardships, the tribute of gold, a requirement which the natives agreed to produce when stopped by Spanish soldiers, and the encomienda, a system whereby entire villages were assigned to individual or group colonizers for forced labor, which reduced the population drastically. By 1516, according to Benjamin Keene, author of Black Legend in the Christopher Columbus Encyclopedia, thanks to the sinister Indian slave trade and labor policies initiated by Columbus, only some 12,000 remained. In 1517, Pedro de Cordoba wrote to King Ferdinand, "As a result of the sufferings and hard labor they endured, the Indians have chosen suicide. Occasionally, 100 have committed mass suicide. Women exhausted by labor have shunned conception and childbirth. Many have aborted. Others, after delivery, have killed their children with their own hands so as not to leave them in such oppressive slavery." Cited by Sale in the book The Conquest of Paradise, Las Casas noted that fewer than 200 Indians lived in 1542. By 1555, they were all gone. What are the conditions and mindset still in existence which give birth to these horrible events? Does this Colombian mindset exist today? Written in Professor David E. Stannard's documentary, American Holocaust, pages 247 and 248, is one precondition required for genocide of people in the Americas, that of cognitive dissonance, which still lives and applies to our world today. In The Lucifer Effect, Philip Zimbardo writes on page 219, "Dissonance is a state of tension that can powerfully motivate change, either in one's public behavior or in one's private views, in efforts to reduce dissonance. When there is discrepancy between our behavior and beliefs, and actions do not follow from relevant attitudes, cognitive dissonance is created." Dehumanization by redefinition. One cannot easily murder or abuse an equal in status. Therefore, some means of dehumanization is required to accomplish the desired goal of elimination of others. The definition of them as inherently and racially inferior beings. This definition of the Indians as natural slaves and beasts of burden allowed for an excuse slavery and the abuses perpetrated upon these people by the Spanish conquerors. And later, of course, the same mindset allowed for enslavement of African captives. On page 59, it is said of Columbus, as recorded in the textbook Lies My Teacher Told Me, "Columbus gives us the first recorded example of cognitive dissonance in the Americas. For although the Indians may have changed from hospitable to angry, they could hardly have evolved from intelligent to stupid so quickly. The change had to be in Columbus." Another justification of the greed, genocide, and slavery reaches back to Christian and European sources, which identified Indians as human subspecies, Satan's helpers, murderous, bestial, man-beasts who readily took on the form of bears and wolves or vermin. Since indigenous people resisted assimilation to Christian religion and its culture, the only answer to the problem as seen by British and American settlers was in straightforward slaughter. This justification is also demonstrated in the Rwandan Holocaust in 1994. Former friends and neighbors, the Tutsis and Hutu clans, became enemies. For 3 months, Miss Ilibagiza survived in a hidden bathroom 3 feet by 6 feet long with several other women in a pastor's home, while the Hutus, armed with machetes, chopped and slashed every Tutsi they could find, meanwhile calling for the cockroaches to come out and be slaughtered. Left to Tell is Immaculée Ilibagiza's book. Her account of survival those 3 months, while except for one brother, her family and nearly 1 million others were hacked to pieces. Besides dissonance, the matter of problem solving or to get rid of the problem, is a key factor as explained in Chapter 10 of The Lucifer Effect. The worst-case scenario was the Nazi SS doctors, who were assigned the role of selecting concentration camp inmates for extermination or for experiments. They were socialized away from their usual healing role into the new role, assisting with killing by means of group consensus that their behavior was necessary for the common good, which led them to adopt several extreme psychological defenses against facing the reality of their complicity in the mass murder of Jews. How can these things be done here, was the question. Then there was something like a general answer which clarified everything. What is better for him, the prisoner, whether he croaks in shit or goes to heaven in a cloud of gas? And that settled the whole matter for the initiates. Mass killing was the unyielding fact of life which everyone expected to adopt. The final solution stood for mass murder without sounding or feeling like it, and it kept the focus on problem solving. On page 211, the Lucifer Effect, author Philip Zimbardo notes that the Stanford Prison Experiment, SPE, which he initiated at Stanford University along with other social science research, shows us that most of us can undergo significant character transformation when we are caught up in the crucible of social forces. And that concludes it.
Wow. That was amazing. I'll let you go first, David.
You know, Vivian, you have left me, it's a very difficult task, but you left me just about speechless because, you know, you obviously did great research and, you know, you have, I can tell by the way you read that you have great passion for what you know and the things that you do. I've read Lies My Teacher Told Me, everything the American history books got wrong, the textbooks got wrong. And, you know, it's like, you know, it's one thing to read it on the page, but it's a complete different thing to hear you read it. And
right.
Again, I really appreciate the work you just did. Now, you know, this is the weekend where we celebrate this day, and I have to mention the fact that as Mel well knows, because we work on this together all the time. You know, we're speaking about genocide, and we're talking about the mass murders of not just the indigenous here on Turtle Island, but, you know, Aboriginal people throughout the world. Tribal societies are even to this day being wiped out. In the 1950s, when Christianity was first introduced to the Guarani people in Ecuador, it opened, there were, I forgot how many of them, I think there were four or five missionaries that were killed by Guarani warriors, but one of those warriors was converted, and what happened was that it divided the Guarani camps. You have the ones that became essentially the missionary Indians or the praying Indians, and then the ones that went into the woods to escape the abuse. Now, what happened was that I believe it was the sister of one of the missionaries continued to do the missionary work among the Guarani, and what she did was that she opened up doors to big oil to go into the Amazon, and now they have such a high risk of cancer and other diseases. Again, genocide. And you know, it's very painful. You know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, you're listening to this show. We talk about Columbus, and many have said, well, you know, that was then. This is now. You know, we talk about the English conquest and France's attempts at conquest, and they say, well, that was then. You know, this is now. Get over it. But, ladies and gentlemen, the genocide continues. It continues.
Right.
And, you know, this is something that we need to address and be honest about it, but, you know, not for the sake of clashing, not for the sake of butting heads, but for the sake of like a doctor diagnoses a medical condition. We're diagnosing a very serious worldwide disease. It's called genocide. And with genocide, we have ecocide. They're trying to murder the earth and sky and all in between. And now we have this wonderful guest on this show tonight, you know, who read from her heart. And I'm hoping and praying that people who are listening to this show tonight are paying close attention. We do not celebrate Columbus Day. I don't celebrate it, and any Native person in his and her right mind celebrate Columbus Day. But in the words of the Taino people, I got bad news for you, Columbus, and I got bad news for you, descendants of this awful man. Wakia Taino Kwan Yahabo, we the Taino people are still here. And thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Ooh, yeah.
That's fabulous.
I love that one. No, wasn't it? Oh, my God. Chills. And what's even more amazing, and I don't want this to escape the fact, that you began as a missionary kid, and you could not have been more indoctrinated into the Christian belief system than you were. And yet you found your way to truths that people who didn't go through all that don't even know. In your book, you even described residential schools and mentioned Doctrine of Discovery, and you really have taken time to historically educate yourself. And that journey in itself is something that should be praised, because when you come from where you came from and now you know what you know now, that only could exist if you had the internal desire to know the truth above all other things.
Well, there's healing in truth. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And it took me, I was 55 years old when everything began to fall apart with my own experiences. And it's been, almost 8 years? I'm 63 now. And I just thank God for my husband, who stayed with me and who just loved me all through the horrors and things, because he sure got a lapful.
Bless the husband sometimes.
Yeah. But he's an amazing man, but God bless him. He's with me, and he's with me on this journey as well. But you have two choices when you encounter horrible things like this. And
yeah.
And whether it's in the mission school or the historical side of things, which all, of course, mesh together. You can either say, well, like some do, that was then, and I don't really care about it, which we just heard this weekend, not this weekend, last weekend. Or you can say, oh, my God, what do I need to understand about this so I have a better understanding and what can possibly be done? And, of course, I'm not by any means, and I don't want anybody to ever, ever put me on a pedestal of any kind, because it's really, that is, you know, with my story and so on, I set myself up as a target, and that's okay. I don't mind being a target. But the thing is that my parents were placed on pedestals their whole lives, as are many, many missionaries. And that's a good place to fall down from. You know,
yes, it is.
I don't want to fall. I'm too old for that.
If you stay grounded, then the fall is much easier.
Yeah. So please, pardon me?
No, I was just saying, I was just voicing shock. You know, Vivian, I will tell you this right now. The way of the indigenous people is to walk the path of the human being, a good human being, and a complete human being. And Vivian, you walk the path of the human being. And if you have set yourself up as a target, believe me, we got your back. You are a beautiful human being. Beautiful human being.
I'm really glad to hear that.
Absolutely. You know I'm there.
Yes, I know you are, Nell. I love you, too.
One thing I found very interesting is where you mentioned Rwanda.
Mm-hmm.
That, to me, sticks in my mind as the ultimate in propaganda coming to life, because there was absolutely no difference between the two, but just the name of who they were. And
mm-hmm.
yet they turned on each other and were able to kill a whole, just target them in the most brutal way. And you can't,
yes.
there's something within the human nature that allows us to believe in demonizing someone else and believing that is being true. And that
mm-hmm.
is, there's no better example in the world than that.
Yeah.
And I watched shows afterwards about that where they apologize to each other and here's two goats for the fact that I killed your family. And that's literally the way they solved it. An elder came together and said, you know, here's two goats and a chicken. Sorry about your family. And they move on. Yeah, and it's
mm-hmm.
like, you know, I don't even know how you recover from something where your own people did that to you. But it's interesting that you connected that piece, because I definitely connected as part of the human flaw that we have of being able to allow mass murder and be indifferent to it.
Right.
What it says to me, too, and I don't know if you've read Philip Zimbardo's book, The Lucifer Effect. He's a social scientist who worked at Stanford University. And during his years there, he did the prison experiment, which was supposed to last 2 weeks. At least a month, if not 6 weeks, if I remember anywhere near accurately. But it had to be shut down after 2 weeks because of the abuse factor. And this is changing college students who are young, wet behind the ears, you know, just, you know, inexperienced mm-hmm. young people, and placing them in the roles of guards and in the role of prisoner, and how that role, how the dark glasses, how the uniform, how everything
yep.
impacted their behavior. And it is a terrifying book to read, because it sheds light on.
I'm definitely reading that book.
I'm warning you, it's a hard book, but it is so worth it. It's so worth it.
Oh, I definitely will be reading that by tomorrow.
Absolutely.
I find these social experiments so interesting, where they had, was the one you talked about with Stanford, that was the one, was it where they actually did electric shock? Because there's one video that I've watched where they actually administered shock and the people were saying, you know, no, stop, it hurts, stop. And they just kept right on going because the authority figure told them. So there is a factor that when
yes.
something comes from an authority figure, whether
mm-hmm.
it can be the most mass murdering thing that you could ever conceive, which is what Columbus
yes.
did, but
yes.
it came from authority and it had some seal of approval, and therefore
yes, that's
it's valid.
Mentioned. That is
yeah.
that is very well addressed as other experiments. And another thing that will be very rewarding at the end of the book, I just have to say this because it's so hard to read, is at the end, Zimbardo presents information about how the system, which is actually an entity made up of individuals who created it, but which seems to take over the individuals, the system is what you have to be aware of. And as far as understanding how to work, like under the radar, if you will, how to be aware of certain things that the system presents to us is very important to know, because otherwise it's sort of like where someone presents you a magic apple and tells you it'll fix everything.
Yeah.
You have to be careful not to accept that magic apple in any form.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes into details and it also follows up on the stories of the students that were in different roles, both the prisoner and the guard roles, and it's a tremendous learning experience. It's also recommended on MK Safety Net, which is the site that has been developed now for over 20 years now for survivors of mission abuse and religious abuse and such.
Mm-hmm.
But
yeah,
that's one of the recommended reads.
Yeah. Absolutely. We do have one call that I want to take.
Okay.
Hold on just a second. Lonnie, are you there?
Yeah, now can you hear me?
Absolutely. Welcome to the show.
How you doing? I saw your blurb pass through. I've been so busy with so much, but I just thought I'd chime in on this topic that's meant a lot to me. You know, it's good to hear, about the research and my thesis that I've been doing about historical trauma. In fact, I'm about ready to go out into the world to do the healing from this, starting when I went through the White Bison's journey for forgiveness.
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing that I haven't heard you discuss is how... You know, I mean, everybody knows that Columbus was a murderer, but you got to understand how it came to be honored and the purpose behind what it was done in this United States that's brought it to what we have today. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, we all live in this American dream, and it's all about perceptions and what we think mm-hmm. and what we're told, especially now with this blitz of mass media.
Mm-hmm.
In 1930s, Roosevelt. In accommodation, you know, this country is founded on the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants and their drive for their self-God-given rights to think that they had the right to tell others what to do.
Mm-hmm.
But when the Catholics started driving here, especially in the 1880s up through the 1930s, and there became a vast populace, Columbus Day was put in place to pacify the Catholic voting bloc. That came apart, that needed through the Knights of Columbus a hero, which was then grabbed on by Roosevelt and used to perpetuate the United States stepping up as the driving force of colonialism in the world.
Ooh.
You know, it's amazing how out of the boarding schools, with the Indians, who had been within a generation been slaughtered by the armies, were then brainwashed into joining the armies to go out and do to others in the world what was done to them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've talked to elders who went through that, and they went right straight into the army, and they told their drill sergeants were told, leave them alone, they're already broke, use them as
Ooh.
They are. You know, I mean, it was a social discourse, and it was a breakdown of the worldview that. You know, when the white man came to this country, the Indians had no word for wilderness. They just mm-hmm. lived with the world as the world was presented to them, as they lived. Well, white man came here, and they had to change because of their word wilderness. They were afraid of what they didn't understand, what they had, so they had to change it and make it in what image they could control. You know, under
right.
the, you know, the domination that they believe from their religious views.
Yep.
But
yep.
as a result of this, in 1937, you know, they created this Columbus Day. Well, in Seattle, you know, we're stepping up, and we're on our fourth year consecutive year. And in fact, it's almost ironic. This year, the occupiers where Seattle is one of the big cities of the occupiers. Well, we've actually had, you know, considerable, you know, conferences with these organizers who are then throwing their weight of their occupation in Seattle behind our No Columbus Day protest. It's actually quite enlightening.
Hmm.
Wow.
That's
wow.
Good.
So, yeah. So I mean, you know, like I said, it's all a matter about perceptions because I mean, even in the dissidents in the Native American community. Especially those who have assumed the, you know, the religious view of the oppressor. And don't take me wrong, I am not a Christian, and so you can probably feel the fact that this was, to me, one of the tools used to break the spirit and the body of the populations.
Absolutely. Right. Right on. That's right. That's right. I've experienced that breaking myself, brother. So you are right on the money. And you know, it took me a long time to shake those chains off. You know, I'm glad that you brought out these facts, bro. Thank you very much, man.
Well, you know, it's kind of been a split in my family because, see, my family is on my mom's side is where it all started. Her forebears were in that Mormon wagon train coming across country, and one of the eight wives that was the direct line of my mom was the Native woman who survived an army decimating her village.
Mm-hmm.
Well. You know what? And in fact, you know, there were more massacres than Wounded Knee and Sand Creek. There was actually one that was caused by the Mormon influx in Idaho. The Indians reacted and they called in the army and they wiped them out. I mean, almost totally wiped them out. You don't hear about that one. I think it was Bear Creek, I believe it was called.
Yeah, well, didn't Joseph Smith actually perpetrate that and then decided to blame the indigenous population there?
Well, like I said, what it was is it was mostly a block of the Shoshones in the area. You know, I mean, they were a lot of mobile tribes that, you know, that followed the herds and, you know, lived in different areas in different seasons. But when the Mormons came in, you know, I mean, when the Mormons split in Utah, part of them went north, and a big portion of them ended up in Idaho. Well, they overhunted. They all, you know, I mean, they weren't ready for when they got there. And so what they did is they created a deficit in the food supply that the Shoshones normally counted on in that region. And so, of course, there was raids, and they, you know, I mean, there was always reactions. But like I said, they weren't ready for it, and they called in the army.
Right. That's essentially what they did as well to the Santee in 1862.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, wow. Well, like I said, a lot of what we're having to deal with today is in looking at this going back is, you know, it's all about the perceptions. You know, it's what, you know, as we're handed this story. And, you know, they don't tell you why. I mean, they're still today teaching these falsehoods about Columbus. I asked a little girl, 10-year-old girl, in my healing circle that I run every week that, you know, she was there, and I'm going, you know, what do they teach you about Columbus? And, you know, I mean, she just gave the party line. They're still teaching it. You know, those in control, this, you know, what they're calling them now, this elite 1%, whatever, the 99ers are calling the others. It's all, you know, the ones that own the media stations, the ones that own the TV stations, the ones that own the cable, the businesses, and the government are, you know, perpetuating this mythical American dream. Well, you know, people are getting to the point where they say, you know, I mean, they don't want critical thinkers. You know, why do you think the states are dumbing their students down, pushing them through with, you know, tests and making these dummy obedient workers? They don't want people that'll stand up and check the stories and check the facts and, you know, you know, give them a football game to watch.
Uh-huh. Right, and give them plenty of video games to play, too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, that's too.
Yeah,
you know, cartoons 24 hours a day, 7 days a week instead of the old one day. We used to have cartoons Saturdays, and we got our fill of cartoons one day a week.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a great day, by the way.
Yes, it was a good day. You know, that was the day the kids got the TV.
Yeah.
Now now kids got TVs in their room.
Oh yeah. Wow. You know, this is really deep. I did have the opportunity to give a series of school presentations. I was a guest instructor at high school, and it was an interesting class because it was an elective. They were trying to eliminate the mascot from their team, and I was one of the guest instructors invited to speak to these high school students. And after I was done, the teacher would send me letters, these notes that the students would write. And after I was done referring, speaking of Columbus Day, a student says, "I will never, ever celebrate Columbus Day again, thanks to David Little." So, you know, it worked out good. I think we still have an opportunity to educate these young people. And brother, you know, thank you again, man. And, you know, and thank you, Vivian. And, you know, Nell, I think this is really awesome. What do you think, sis?
Oh, I love it. Boy, I'm so glad that any time we can bring all this information to the air, I'm just as happy as can be because I'm so sick of living in a world of lies.
Mm-mm. Absolutely.
I totally
wow.
agree.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we need
thing,
to take
I
back
have,
the history books.
Oh, well, one thing we have seen is a result of our continued, I mean, we don't just go on Columbus Day. I mean, we've got student organizations, but, you know, Native Parents and Teachers Associations all driving for the facts of let's see what history is not telling us. And we actually, you know, I guess a lot of it has to do with the ignorance of the politics, whether it be in a red state or a blue state. But state by state, they are dropping the national holiday. Washington State right now has rejected and removed Columbus Day as a national holiday. So, I mean, it's a small step, but, but then people, you know, then you get the pacifist people that don't care. They just don't get the day off anymore, and they're angry.
Yeah.
You know, they don't even know what the reason behind the day off is. They just don't want to work. And so there you go. I mean, you know, they touched the nerve. They wanted a paid holiday, and now they ain't got it, and so they're angry. You know?
Right.
It's like,
well, we'll just have to come up with another holiday in place of it.
Yeah.
How about
That's
Truth
fun.
And Media Day? There's a holiday.
Oh, man.
Well, Lonnie, is there any way anybody can get in touch with you to find out more about all the great stuff you're doing? Because we'd love to also have you back on the show.
Well, my face, you're on my Facebook. My Facebook is a blog, and another consideration is behind this assimilist colonialist attitude is in our city in Seattle, we had a homeless. Well, he wasn't homeless. He had an apartment. They claimed him as homeless. He used to be. He was shot. It was a native carver, an indigenous man who loved his people, loved his traditions, was shot four times in the back by a police officer, and he got away with it.
Yes.
I remember that.
Yeah, I don't know if you heard about the John G. Williams, but you know what?
Yeah.
Actually, I'm in a group. We actually backed the mayor down. The mayor was going, because of the occupiers thing going on, was actually going to try and deny us or disrupt our fourth annual Columbus Day protest, and was going to try and shuffle us off at the last minute. And we stood up, and actually, we had an excellent Native lawyer who is part of the Indians for Justice, which is the Native group working with the Department of Justice for justice for this carver getting shot, but. He actually backed down, gave us permission, said there will be no police involvement, and said, I think he knew, could smell it in the wind that he better just back up and not get hardball on us, because we could have been down there riling the occupiers all up.
Thank you so much for calling in and telling us all.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
Good to hear. Yeah.
I said, hey, you know what? You can pass my. It's just Lonnie P. And just do search of Lonnie P. And you'll find me sitting there with my white hat with a feather
white
eagle
hat.
Feather in it.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, the white hat with eagle feather.
Yeah, I just posted posted it on both their walls already.
Yeah.
We'll definitely be in touch, though, because I want to hear more about your work. It sounds like you're doing some great things.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
All right, brother. What's this?
Bye.
Well, that's good to hear.
Yeah. And it's great to see the network expanding to so many different directions, because collectively is where we get the real truth.
And absolutely, and not only that, but, you know, it's like, I think you, Mel, and Vivian and I think we were pretty much close to tears, okay? And, you know, this brother comes in, and he just set a fire. But I'm just kidding about the tears. What you have done, Vivian, is that you've set the Kindle on fire, dear lady. You know, and I hope that others follow your example, because you are a wonderful human being. And you know, this is a very important issue, because it's not just here. You know, it's not just here on Turtle Island. We have colonial, imperialistic, genocidal attempts going on worldwide.
Right.
Worldwide.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's something that we either take a stand together against, or we let this genocidal lunacy take us over and defeat us.
I vote for a stand. Stand together.
Absolutely. And it ties into, even though it starts small, there will be a point at which the water just flows over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's right.
Tipping point.
That's you know, it may not happen in my lifetime, but it's coming. I really think that when people stand up for what's right and true, that somehow eventually it does come to pass, you know, and people can do with it what they want, but then that's on their own heads, which is okay with me, because I'm not about to evangelize anybody, you know. But it's got to be where truth is shared, because how can you live with yourself if you don't? I just don't get it. And I'm just really, really glad for a chance to speak out. It's an encouraging thing, and I find that it sort of helps me deal with why did these things happen in my past, because it's coming to pass in different ways now that is actually hopefully going to produce some change. And I'm kind of getting wordy and everything, but I want it to be for a reason, in other words, you know. I know too many people who are still split apart inside and who are not unified inside themselves, and that's just awful.
Absolutely correct. You know, we deal a lot with adults who have been through horrible abuse as children, and one of the main messages that we send out to these precious people is, it's not your fault. Your fault. And so, you know, to my peoples of Turtle Island, and to all my brothers and sisters throughout the world who are being exploited, abused, and they're trying to wipe you out, you know what? It's not your fault.
Absolutely.
It's not your fault. And, you know, when we become bitter and we begin to impose on others the same treatment that's been imposed on us, that two wrongs don't make a right. What we need to do is start to heal. We need to heal. And, you know, that's an important issue. And that's something that you have brought to this show tonight, my sister. And, again, I thank you.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. I do thank you, too.
All right. So I'm working on getting Russ to call in, because I wanted him to add a couple of things before we transition to David. So hopefully he'll be calling in soon, Russ. And then we'll transition on to David. But also I want to remind everybody that Vivian's going to be our guest tomorrow on Fire Talk at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. So That's going to be great.
Yes, it is.
Now, so if Russ hasn't called in yet, then we'll go ahead and transition to your piece, David. Oh, wait. There he is. I want to give him an opportunity.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, Russ.
How are you guys?
I'm doing fine.
Just getting home. Vivian, I wanted to call in. I heard you guys talking on here, and I wanted to call in. And sorry I missed the show today. I was working. I really don't know what's been said. You know, I have what I feel on the issue is you know, it's Nell asked me if I had any thoughts on it in the chat room when I first got there. And I said, well, yeah, I'm glad his ass is dead. I think we should dig him up and let's display him. You know, so from that stance is where I'm going to start my comment from. You know, when I hear things like when America was born or when this nation grew and things like that, you know, it goes through me because I know the truth of what happened. And I believe when we start educating the truth, it's when other people will start understanding it also, and that's when humanity will come back. The whole Columbus thing, the world was flat, we found it was round, you know, that whole thing's a myth. You know,
yeah.
I'm sure you guys know it, you know, and there was commerce between the Native nations of Turtle Island and around the world before colonization. The world could not have been flat if there was commerce going on. There are writings from the Quran. There's Muslim symbols here in Turtle Island that date back to 1800. You know, I mean, there's known fact that what came over was not a religion looking for its freedom. What came over was a people trying to be more superior than anyone else. And that's what colonization was, and that's what it is today over in the Middle East. Once again, we are sprouting our wings to be the colonizer, trying to be more superior than someone else, that you have the right to come in to someone's home and throw them out and say, this is now mine.
Mm-hmm.
No, so it's not done under religion. And I know we beat the hell out of religion because of the blind faith that follows it. But, you know, in all due respect, religion is of something good. There's nothing bad in what they write, even if they've changed it 5 or 6 times and, you know, whatever they want to do with it. As long as you walk in good faith and as long as you're true to the kingdoms, the human kingdom, the plant kingdom, and the animal kingdom, you know, then you are walking the right way. But when they go to all this, you know, this rebirth, the birth and all that stuff, you know, it just goes right through me, and it should go through any intelligent person who knows the truth. The problem is getting them to teach the truth.
Right.
You know, what colonization is and what genocide is still today. You know, that whole concept will never come to a intellectual stimulant in education until it's accepted. And society just hasn't accepted it. They're still hidden behind religion. You know, they still think religion is their way to this perpetrated heaven. Your heaven should be now. And that heaven is produced by how you live your life.
Okay.
So I hope that fit into you guys' conversation and what you were saying. I'm going to go back and listen to it. I was just getting home, so I wanted to call in.
Yeah, it fit in perfectly, as I knew it would.
Always good to hear from you, brother. You know,
good to hear you,
love to hear from you guys.
All right, I hope.
Yeah,
right,
you know, and
I was
really glad to see that this show came on and that Vivian was gonna. I'm gonna go back. I don't know if you did a reading or not, but I'm really glad that you spoke on the issue. I mean, it just seems to me like this society has glorified its mass murderers. They put medals on people who've murdered innocents. You know, when they come into our villages and wipe us out completely, that's called a victory. When we learn to fight back, and we did, when we fought back, those were called massacres.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a whole level of society that's not even mentioned today. When you talk about the injustices of this land It only goes back to slavery. It stops at the African Americans who were sold by their own people to come to this land. They never go back as far as the native, like they're already gone. We're still here. And we've learned to speak because the silence is killing us. Thank you guys for speaking on this.
Love you, Russ.
Oh.
Have a great evening.
All right, you guys. David. David, would you like to wrap it up with however you feel about things and transition into the music?
Thank you very much, my sister. You know, a while back I wrote a poem called When I Met God. The poem got me into a bit of trouble because people couldn't read between the lines. They couldn't see what I was trying to say through the poem. And I'm not going to read it tonight, but you know, listening to this, you know, the God that the indigenous people met were dressed in black robes.
Mm-hmm.
And those black robes essentially tried to murder us and just wipe us out from the face of the earth. And it continued on and on past 1492 and, yes, continues to this very day in 2011. So I am going to close this segment with a song that I wrote. I'm debuting it for the first time in public. It's a song that I wrote. It has no title to it yet, but I think it has a message that speaks not just of the genocide and the suicides that came from it, but the hope that we have as the indigenous people of Turtle Island. So I want to dedicate this song to all my relatives, all my relations. Aho.
Thank you.
When the sun goes down, I can hear the voices of the ancestors say, grandson, don't forget your people, try to live in the old way. But I can't live the way we did in those days, because the greedy ones took it all away. I'm an Indian man, and I have to say, I'm a long way from home. I'm a long way from home. My people are sick, my people are dying, and I wonder as I cry, does Great Spirit plan to heal us or plan to let us die? We were one with the earth and sky in those days, till the government took it all away. We are Indian people and have gone astray on this reservation road, on this reservation road. Genocide is the name of this sad and awful game. Darkness came and filled the land, and we've never been the same. And we feel the pain, our tears fall like rain. Way-ha-ya, 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 way-ha-ya. Way-ha-ya, 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 way-ha-ya. A young girl cried when her daddy died on this reservation road. A broken heart and desperation really got her goad. She was tired, so tired of living this way. Couldn't go and she couldn't stay. Reservation life took it all away, and now she stands alone on this reservation road. Suicide is the name of the fruit of grief and shame. Darkness came and filled our souls, and we've never been the same. And we feel the pain, how tears fall like rain. Way-ha-ya, 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 way-ha-ya. When the sun goes down, I can hear Grandfather, his voice so strong and bold, saying, Grandson, don't forget who you are, don't let your heart grow cold. Though you can't live the way we did in those days, there's power in your songs and words that you say. We are Indian people and we're here to stay, and you are coming home. Yeah, you're finally coming home.
Yeah. That's beautiful.
Ooh, yeah.
What a powerful heart cry.
Thank you so much. Man, that was incredible, David. Your music adds so many layers to the show. Thank you for gifting us with it.
Thank you for the privilege and honor. Thank you.
Wow. So, any closing comments from anyone?
Just thank you again, Nell, and thank you. Thank you, David, for your work and for your encouragement. It means a tremendous amount to me. Thank you.
And this show this show is owed to you, Vivian, because if you didn't write that, the show would not exist. So all the energy
right.
here is the collective of what you writing that created. So bless you for that.
Thank you.
We appreciate you, Vivian. We appreciate you. Welcome to the family, sis.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
All right. David, do you mind if I play your song? Is it Ancestors? Is that the...
Ancestral.
Let's
end the show with that. I think it'd be great. Thank you, sis.
All righty. Thank you, everyone, for coming.